You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA and a certified financial planner on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen each and every week that you're away from your radio online at wdiy.org. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is December 19th. The markets were down a bit today. The Dow closing at 13,251, the NASDAQ at 3044, and the S&P at 1435. I'm happy to have you all here, and have to apologize a little bit for my voice. I'm lucky I have my voice. There was a couple days this past week that I didn't have a voice, so I'm glad I'm able to be here tonight, which will also prompt me asking for frequent phone calls with questions. And if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Last week, we discussed last-minute tax planning strategies and other financial planning topics. Tonight, I have a guest with me in the studio to chat about various types of real estate investments and factors to consider when considering real estate investments from a practical and tax standpoint. And it's going to be kind of a broad brush of different options that folks have. We are live. Andrea is with us, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we will do the best to answer them. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And tonight, real estate investments and factors to consider. So I have with me this evening financial advisor Matthew Petrozelli from Valley National Financial Advisors, and it is his second trip with us. Welcome back to the show, Matt.
Great. Thanks for having me, Laura. It's great to be back.
Thank you for being here. So for those new listeners to the show, start by telling us a little bit about yourself and then why it's worthwhile discussing real estate this evening.
Sure. As Lori mentioned, I'm with Valley National Financial Advisors. I'm a vice president, and it's my second time on the show, so it's great to be back. It's really important to talk about real estate. You know, everybody thought that real estate was this risk-free asset, you know, years over years over years of investing in real estate. And, you know, in 2008, when the bubble burst and we went through that financial crisis and the prices of real estate dropped, I think, you know, Americans and people in this area have been very tentative to invest in real estate, don't understand all the risks and factors and the different ways to invest in real estate. So I think it's important to talk about it, and I think we're have some good topics to discuss.
Yeah, and really, real estate affects so many of us because most of us, you know, well, quite a few people could be homeowners or people who are looking to be a homeowner. So we're going to talk about factors, you know, relating to that, but then even a little bit more broadly as we go through the show. So let me set the stage for our discussion this evening. When we talk about real estate investing, there are a number of avenues that people can take. In addition to their principal residence, it could be vacation property, it could be commercial real estate, investment property that you may or may not rent, real estate investment trust, otherwise known as REITs. You'll hear advisors talking about that from time to time, and quite often we don't even know what a REIT is. So it's real estate investment trust. Any of these may or may not have a place for you, depending on your own situation. So I think it's good to kind of be aware for yourself, for your own investing and opportunities for yourself. So we do want to talk about some of the situations tonight that would be out there, and then some of the aspects to consider when going down the path of considering real estate as part of your portfolio, as part of your investment strategy. So we will be giving broad brush review, but we're not going to have time to talk about all the details of the different options. There are a lot of details associated with each option that we're going to discuss tonight, but we're going to try to give you a broad brush, and then with future shows we can always kind of delve into the details. But as we go through the show, by the end of the show I'm hoping to also talk about rental real estate, because that seems to be, you know, one of the areas where we get the most questions. So as we go through the show, as we move through, we'll probably try to talk about that a little bit. But Matt, I want to start by asking you about some news that Valley National Financial Advisors has on the front of real estate. So if you're allowed to talk about that.
Sure. And we're very excited to announce that we'll be moving offices in a couple of weeks, right across the street from where we are now, in the Lehigh Valley Corporate Center on Valley Center Parkway. We're moving to a new 7,000 plus square foot facility. To really kind of usher in the growth of Valley National as we move forward. And, you know, really proud to say that we're going to be staying right here in the heart of the Lehigh Valley to continue to serve our clients and in the community. And it was a really exciting decision. And you know, I've learned a lot about real estate through the transaction process and the renovation process. So it's you know, pertinent for what we're talking about today.
Which is why I thought it would be a great opportunity to have you here, so you can kind of talk about, because you're familiar with how people use real estate in their portfolios, but I thought really you have some real hands-on experience as well with this, that I thought it would be worth mentioning, kind of broadening our exposure to real estate and what goes into the decision making. So can you kind of go through some of the considerations that, you know, you went through in considering the move, whether you should or not, how that all came about?
Sure. Valley National felt it was the right time to be purchasing real estate, and we're looking at what's called a commercial property, Lori. So that's where there's office space or you know, retail space or things of that nature. So we really wanted to find an office building that we could be what's called an owner occupier. So we could go down the process of possibly buying the building, renting out certain parts of the building to other tenants, and then being an occupier for ourselves. What you've really got to look at it, and what made us decide to do that was a few different things. Obviously, the price of real estate has declined significantly since the peak in 2007. So we really felt it was a undervalued asset class and something that we needed more space anyway. So rather than signing another long-term lease, why not go out and look to put some capital to work and get a good deal and maybe make it be a good owner-occupier space. Interest rates nowadays, Lori, as you probably know, are at rock bottom rates, historical lows. So for us to borrow some money to make the deal work, and, you know, there's some construction that goes involved to fixing out your space, and obviously to purchase the property when it becomes that time, interest rates are a huge factor. And right now, the Fed could not be more accommodating for those types of deals if you qualify. So interest rates are very low. So we felt it was the perfect type of storm for us to make that type of move.
Okay, so this is something, if there are business owners out there listening right now, and maybe they're in the similar situation where they've been renting, and sometimes that's a very good arrangement for people. But sometimes we get comfortable in our situation and we forget to kind of broaden our horizons and spend some time reassessing or evaluating where we are in our business, or we're so busy taking care of business that we don't stop to consider what else is changing in the environment. And as you said, right now, prices are low because of the market and what had happened to it, and interest rates are low. So this might be kind of a wake-up call for some business owners out there who might be renting right now, having leases, and it could be an opportunity for them to consider for themselves whether or not it might make sense to consider owning. And owning doesn't mean that you're in the building by yourself. It could be a building that you buy that you can rent out space, get a little cash flow. So these are all good considerations when we're looking at whether to rent as a business owner or to buy. So price, interest rates, and then you're hoping, Matt, I imagine, that with the business, when it's owner-occupied, you have a little bit more control over the cost of the building and things like that. That probably came into consideration as well.
That's correct. You know, costs are everything, right? But you know, being an owner by occupier, you know, having two tenants in the building alongside us, we're able to manage cash flow a little bit more effectively for our business. You know, when you have a rent and a long-term lease, maybe 5 or 7 years, you know what you're locked into. You don't have a lot of flexibility. If you want to invest something 5 years down the road into your business, but you have to pay a high rent overhead cost, if we've got two tenants that are paying cash flow to the building owner, we could be a little bit more flexible with our cash flow down the line. And that was something that was attractive to us at the time. You know, but rental rates now too, Lori, are still relatively attractive, but we think they're starting to level out a little bit. So there is some starting to see that pent-up demand in the rental market, mm-hmm. A little bit more, still not where it was in 2007. But usually when that rental starts to bottom out and then increase a little bit, you know, we thought that was the right time to buy too, because it would protect our cash flow investment within the building.
Okay, so prices, interest rates, and flexibility, all great reasons to maybe consider looking into buying for business owners, just to check it out. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion on opportunities in the real estate market and give you a broad brush view of what all those different aspects might be. You can give us a call at 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Many organizations are worthy of your financial support this time of year. We appreciate your considering WDIY among them. Listener support makes the news and music on WDIY possible. Make your tax-deductible gift online at WDIY.org or call us at 610-694-8100. And thank you for your support.
Okay, we are back with my guest, Matthew Petrozelli. He's a financial advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about real estate and where there's room to fit these types of things in your portfolio. We briefly discussed commercial real estate, kind of an opportunity for maybe business owners or maybe just investors. And commercial real estate includes things such as office buildings, restaurants, medical centers, warehouses, rental buildings. So we might have some listeners out there who are not business owners or not in the market to be a property owner. So we also want to talk about some other real estate investments that we should get some exposure to. Maybe people don't have as much money to buy a building or something like that. So from an investor standpoint, Matt, maybe, you know, they're not looking to get a big piece of real estate. Maybe it's too much for them to manage. Let's talk about some of the kind of real estate investments that an investor, an average investor with maybe a brokerage account, could look to get that exposure to real estate in their portfolio that they might want. Can we talk about maybe some of the pros and cons of the different types of investments that they could get into in their portfolio?
Sure. I think there's numerous ways to invest in real estate, but there's probably three big key things that most financial advisors or investors are looking at. And the first would be what are called publicly traded REITs. And as you mentioned earlier, REITs are real estate investment trusts. So they're trusts that are designed to purchase real estate, put them inside the trust, and then investors buy shares of the REIT. Publicly traded REITs are companies that are very large companies. They probably own multiple office buildings or maybe medical facilities or hospitals or shopping malls. And you can buy them on a publicly traded exchange, and they trade just like a stock or an ETF. Okay, so they have to report their earnings. They pay a certain dividend based on the cash flow from the property, and they fluctuate every day in the market. One of the pros of publicly traded REITs, Lori, is there's high liquidity. Just like a stock, you can buy it today and you can sell it tomorrow. The cons are, because they're highly liquid, typically there's a lot more expenses in regards to their earnings. They don't typically pay as high of a dividend. And people really usually buy them for appreciation versus income.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're highly liquid, but sometimes they're not as highly cash flowing as other types of real estate investments. There's another type of REIT out there, which is called a non-publicly traded REIT. And you can talk to your financial advisor or look these up on the web. And they're very illiquid. Okay, so once you purchase these, you want to hold them for a very long period of time. Again, just like a publicly traded REIT, they're going to invest in a large group of properties, so usually specialized, medical, retail, commercial, etc. And they typically will pay a very high income rate. So they're more focused on income because you can't trade them in the open market. You're buying them, holding them, and hoping to get a very large dividend. So you're pooling your capital together with other investors to try to get more income from your investment. But they're not liquid, Lori. So if you've got a short time horizon, or you may want to sell it 6 months, a year, 2 years from now, think of it as buying almost real property. It's going to be very hard to sell that.
Matt, can I ask you a question about them? First, let me give the phone number again, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So from what you're describing, like the REITs, publicly traded or not publicly traded, they're investing in various different types of real estate, but it sounds like it could be a lot of commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was saying earlier in the show when we were talking about commercial property, some people can't afford to buy a whole office building, but maybe they see opportunities there.
Mm-hmm.
They see the markets changing. They want to get in on that, but they can't, afford to do it themselves. So they might be looking at these types of investment options. Do you know if they have like minimums that people have to meet in order to get into them? Or could someone who has $2,000 buy a little piece of these?
Sure. The publicly traded REITs trade just like stocks. So a share may be $50. So as long as you can meet the share price and you have a brokerage account that meets the minimums of the brokerage firm standards, you can invest in publicly traded REITs. Typically, non-publicly traded REITs, the ones that are illiquid and typically pay more income, have some minimum of typically $2,500 to $5,000. It varies on the various company. And the third, Lori, is also a mutual fund. Real estate can be purchased in a mutual fund. So, and those usually are pooled. A number of different REITs are put inside the mutual fund to kind of form a best of breed generalized real estate fund.
Okay.
And those minimums are typically about $2,500 as well. So if you can't afford to go out and buy the office building, but you want to invest in a pool of office buildings, REITs are a great way to do that. You can either do it on the public exchange, very low minimums, or through a non-publicly traded REIT, or through a mutual fund where minimums are typically $2,500.
Just make sure you understand the aspects of each of them so
right.
that it fits in with your, either your risk tolerance or your cash flow needs and that type of thing. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
that's all good. Limited partnerships. You hear people talk about limited partnerships sometimes that have real estate in them. What are we seeing out there for that?
Right. Limited partnerships are almost an offshoot of the REIT. They're structured a little bit different for tax purposes, and they're typically packaged by a small group of investors. So I'll give you an example, Lori, of how a limited partnership might be constructed. We're here in Bethlehem. There are a lot of universities here. Let's say you've got a couple friends and you want to invest in student housing. Maybe you and three of your friends create a limited partnership. You each own a quarter of that limited partnership, and you might pool your capital together to buy four student housing rentals. Again, it's a way that you can pool your resources, have some tax breaks with that limited partnership, and still find a way to collect income as a partner. Typically, limited partnerships do not trade on an open exchange
mm-hmm.
with real estate, but it's a great way that if you're interested in investing with yourself or with a group of people
mm-hmm.
to purchase a certain, put your own little real estate investment together.
Okay, that's a great deal because you often do hear people talking about getting together and going in on things, and one person might be the repair guy
mm-hmm.
and another guy might be the bookkeeper. So it's a great way to maximize your resources and your talents with some of your friends. Just make sure that you go to a lawyer and get it all set up properly, and you do everything the correct way, and make sure you're all covered with a partnership agreement, et cetera, et cetera. So that's great. Folks, if you have questions this evening, give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're giving some broad information on real estate investing, kind of the different aspects of it. And we're about to take our next break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about buying your first home, maybe, or owning a principal residence, and some of the implications of doing that, and the pros and cons of that as well. So again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You are listening to WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 42 degrees under mostly clear skies. Tonight, a few clouds, lows around 27. Thursday, chance of showers, highs around 46. Friday, we're looking at a rain-snow mix with high temperatures around 45 degrees. And Saturday, breezy skies with high temperatures around 39. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Hi, folks. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, as Jeff said. And we are talking about real estate investing tonight. And I have with me in the studio this evening financial advisor Matthew Petrozelli, or Matt, as we call him, Matt Petrozelli from Valley National Financial Advisors. And we thought it would be a good idea to have a show where we kind of talk about real estate and all of the different options that folks might have. So we're giving you some ideas. We're talking about commercial real estate and what that involves. We looked at it from a individual investor, maybe someone who wants to do something in their portfolio. We gave you some options there, talking about the different aspects of REITs, publicly traded and not publicly traded, and limited partnerships, mutual funds. Knowing the different options that you have, that if you hear the buzz about real estate's coming back, and you want to get in on it, but you may not have the resources to get in on it. We're trying to expose you to some different options, not recommending any one thing to anyone in particular, just giving you some educated information so you can make some decisions and be aware. That's what this is all about, awareness. Now, Matt, we're talking about the different kinds of real estate, and at the top of the show I had said one thing that quite a few people have anyway, even if they're not interested in doing rental real estate, will have a principal residence. And sometimes there's people out there who are renting and hoping to someday buy a principal residence, and I know you are one of those people. You're looking for a new house. So I thought you would be also a good person to kind of give us some insights in that. And then I'll throw in some of my ideas. We could probably have Jeff jump in too, because I think Jeff just bought a new house or is in the process of doing that. So tell us what's going on. You're moving from New York City. So I can't imagine anyone would want to buy a house in New York City right now, because prices are probably a fortune no matter what the market looks like. So talk to us about looking for a new home and opportunities that you're seeing there.
Right. We are looking to relocate from New York City. Has been an interesting experience. But going back to what we said at the top of the hour, with prices being a lot lower than they were in 2007 and interest rates being historically low, have led to a really interesting time to look at if you're a first-time home buyer, purchasing real estate. Mm-hmm. But there are some caveats to that. You know, in 2007, Lori, although real estate prices were high, you know, you could get 0% down mortgages.
Good point.
Nowadays, real estate might be a little bit cheaper than it was, but it's also a little bit harder to get financing. Most banks are requiring you to put 15%, 20%, 25% down. You've got to have good credit So during the credit crisis, if you, you know, had some defaults or some financial trouble, and that's still on your credit history, it's a challenge to get credit. But if you've got some good credit and can take advantage of low interest rates and take advantage of a lot of people who are putting their homes on the market because they've sat on them for a very long period of time, after 2007, it's a really interesting time if you're not selling a home to buy another one to really be active in that market. And there's a lot of opportunity.
So some of the factors you look at when you're going to be a new home buyer might be school districts.
Sure.
Future appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhood. The value of the home you might be looking at in comparison to the values of the other homes in the neighborhood. Jeff, do you have any experiences? Might as well have you jump in here.
Absolutely. I think Matt was first correct by saying that, you know, it's probably cheaper to buy now, but it's harder to get financing. So, you know, making sure your finances are in order would probably be my first advice. And then, as you said, Lori, checking out the school district, the neighborhood, the comps in the area, the comparables in the area to see, you know, what is sold in the past 3 months and see if the house you're looking at is comparable to those past sales. So Absolutely, that's good advice.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. So the credit, I guess, is a very important thing. And so making sure your finances are in order. And I know I've had shows in the past where we've talked about ways that people can review that, check that, and try to take care of business. And you can get those free credit reports from Experian and
Equifax, TransUnion.
There you go.
I've been there.
Thanks, Jeff, because Jeff listens to the show. So you go and you can get a credit report and see what it's saying and see what you might be able to clean up that, you know, might not be valid information on that credit report. So you want to go and make sure that you're in order, pay your bills, pay down your credit cards, mm-hmm. all of that kind of thing. But that's a great point, Matt, that you mentioned, because I kind of had forgotten about that. You know, time passes and you don't remember that back in 07 with the zero down, part of what got us into the financial crisis, which then, you know, swung the pendulum the other way, which too easy, now hard. And there's probably a lot of people who would really be very good homeowners, paying their bills and all of that, that are facing a more difficult time in trying to get the credit they need in order to get the mortgage to buy the home. Another point to mention with a principal residence, you also want to remember that there are exclusions on gains if you sell your home. So for those people who aren't just new homeowners, but might be someone who's looking to either downgrade, you know, downsize, I mean, not downgrade, downsize. Sometimes I still hear people being concerned about the gains they have on their home, Matt. And what people don't realize is tax laws have changed a lot over the years in regard to reporting gains on the sale of a principal residence. And I guess what happens is because people don't sell their homes that often, they still think rules apply that were applying 20 years ago. I've had people come in and say, oh, if I'm over age 50, there's a special exclusion for me. Well, I think that was back in 1985 when I was doing tax returns. That's been gone for a long time. Now what happens is people can exclude the gain on their principal residence if you're married filing joint and you both have been living in the home and own the home for at least 2 out of the last 5 years. You can exclude $250,000 gain each. So that's a $500,000 exclusion for a married couple. So if you are someone who's considering maybe changing residence, keep that in mind, that any gains to the extent they're under $500,000 if you're married filing joint or $250,000 if you're single, there's a special exclusion for you as long as you've lived in the home the last 2 out of the 5 years. So it could be an opportunity for those people who might want to take those gains in their home, Matt, and downgrade and could actually maybe buy another house without even financing. That could be something if you're going from a $350,000 home to like a $150,000 home. So, folks, we are talking about real estate this evening and the different types of opportunities. We've talked about commercial. We've talked about REITs, LP, limited partnerships, mutual funds. We've talked about principal residences, some of the advantages and disadvantages of owning a home should come into play as well, because Matt, as someone who's leasing, the repairs you have for your apartment are covered. You're not having to pay for those. Sometimes utilities are covered. So you want to remember and keep in mind that if you are considering buying your own home and having your principal residence, you want to factor in not only the cost of that mortgage, but also the cost of the expenses relating to that, like fixer-ups and things. Jeff?
I think you're absolutely right, Lori. And what we need to remember here in the Lehigh Valley is that it does snow. Mm-hmm. So if you're not one to get out there and shovel that snow, you have to remember, as a homeowner, you either shovel it or pay someone to shovel it. That could be an expense someone may want to consider, too, when buying a home here in the Valley.
Well, too, and the weather, because we've had hurricane-like weather. We have ice. So if you're buying a home that has old trees on the property.
Exactly, as I am. Okay. Looking at a tree that's precariously hanging over a deck in the backyard now. So
we lost a tree in that hurricane. We took it down ourselves, and we were lucky. But I had a client who lost... maybe a dozen trees.
Sure.
Because she had a wooded backyard, and it's costing her $7,000 to remove the trees.
Absolutely. They have to be removed. You can't just leave them there laying in the backyard. So that's another an option to consider, too.
And insurance doesn't always cover
They do not.
So, pros and cons, folks. Keep those in mind. That's what we're talking about today. All your different options and making you aware of ways that you can consider real estate investing. The phone number this evening, we would love some calls. We would love some questions. And they're probably going to come as we get to the end of the show when we're talking about rental property. But we would love them now. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And folks, you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you, your source for local news and public affairs, NPR, and music diversity. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 42 degrees under mostly clear skies. Tonight, few clouds, lows around 27. Thursday, chance of showers, highs around 46. Friday, we have a rain-snow mix with high temperatures around 45 degrees. And it looks like Saturday and Sunday will be sunny skies but breezy with high temperatures each day around 40 degrees. The time now is 6:31. Now back to our program.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening financial advisor Matt Petrozelli with Valley National Financial Advisors. We're bringing some awareness to our listening audience about real estate and opportunities there. If you have questions this evening, and I would love questions, I'm glad Matt's here tonight as well, because my voice, I think I'm going to start losing it as the hour goes on. It's the most I've talked, I think, in 4 days. My husband's happy. Anyway, we'd love some questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We're probably going to concentrate more of the last half of the show about rental real estate and some opportunities there. But before we do that, Matt, you know, a lot of folks will get excited about rental properties because they think they're going to get a good cash flow from it. And there's issues with that as well. And there are some people who do get a good cash flow from rental properties, and there are some people who get burned on rental properties. But even before they take that step, you have to go through a thought process of whether or not it's going to make sense for you to take a chunk of your money or leverage, you know, through mortgages. But even with that, commercial loans are harder to get to, and the rates aren't as low as we might have for principal residence. We'd want to talk about how they're buying that real estate. But as they're going through that thought process, what are some considerations you would suggest investors need to think about when they're going down this path of whether to decide to go into rental real estate or not?
Well, I think when you look at rental real estate, you really have got to, you know, factor in every cost that's associated with that, and how you're going to obtain that cash flow rate of return. I think you also want to take a look at your other investments and your other asset allocation and see how that fits in. And you want to look at all your opportunity costs. You know, as we talked about in the beginning of the show, there are a lot of different ways to invest in real estate. There are REITs, there are mutual funds, there are limited partnerships. You can also go out and buy your own rental property. The money and the time and the effort and the taxes and the maintenance that you put into a rental property, is that cash flow and that time that you're putting into that rental property and the leverage you may put into owning that rental property going to serve you better than maybe owning a publicly traded REIT or a real estate mutual fund? How does that fit into the stock portfolio, the bond portfolio you may have? You may have a very large amount of equity in your residential property that you live in, your primary residence. So you want to take all those factors into consideration. You know, when we talk about asset allocation, Lori, we always talk about the relationship of stocks to bonds to cash. We never really say, you know, you should have 5 or 10 or 15% of that in real estate. It's really different, and it depends for every investor. And it depends on a lot of different things just other than stocks and bonds and cash. So you really want to do that analysis, look at your opportunity costs, and make sure that you're choosing the right type of real estate investment.
Okay.
To give your portfolio the best type of return.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that I think it's worth cautioning people about is riding the bandwagon. You know, so all of a sudden we think real estate could be getting, you know, making a little bit of a comeback, although it'd probably be a slower comeback than what we've seen in the past. But you got to be careful of people trying to put all of their money into real estate just because they think that's the next hot thing. It's about asset allocation, going through the thought process, again, as Matt had mentioned, to see if it's going to make sense for you and if that cash flow that you're going to get from the rental property is going to be the best return on your dollar. Now, we have a caller on line two, John from Easton. John,
Yo.
Can you hear us? John?
Yeah.
Hello. Hi. Can you hear us?
Actually, I can now. Thanks.
Okay, great. You just have to turn down your radio if you have that on. How can we help you tonight?
Well, I've got a question about selling anything that has a capital gain, whether it be real estate or stock. Should I sell it in the next couple of weeks before we fall off the fiscal cliff?
Okay. Well, John, it all depends on your situation, but here's just a few comments, okay? The talk about the fiscal cliff, personally, John, can you still hear us?
Yeah.
Okay. So with the fiscal cliff, either they're going to make a compromise, they're not going to make a compromise, or they might make a compromise after the first of the year. So just because they don't compromise by the end of the year doesn't mean that they're still not going to, you know, fix this in the early part of the year. I certainly hope that they will have a compromise by the end of the year and that we'll get this kind of resolved. I think that's the direction they're going. I think that's the pressure they're feeling. So we're hoping that there will be some confirmation of what tax rates are going to look like in 2013 for folks. What I have seen, John, is that right now in 2012, we know what capital gains tax rates are for long-term holdings, anything you've had longer than a year. And those capital gains tax rates are either 15% or 0%. What we know in 2013, we don't know the rates yet in 2013. They could be the 15%. They could be the zero on people who are in an income tax rate of 15% or lower, long-term capital.
Okay, so 0% is if it's a reasonably low income?
If your taxable income is in a 15% or lower tax bracket, then your capital gains are taxed at zero. So if you're married filing joint and the 15% tax bracket goes up to $69,000 and you told me you had $60,000 of capital gains and what did I say, $60,000 of capital gains, your $60,000 would be taxed at zero because you're in a 15% or lower tax bracket.
Cool.
Okay, so that's 2012. We're not sure what's going to happen in 2013. But
right.
One of the reasons I think you're hearing all this talk about, you know, taking your capital gains, fiscal cliff and all that, I think people are muddying the water a little bit. Because one thing we know that's going to happen in 2013 is something called the Medicare surtax. The Medicare surtax has two pieces to it. And the one piece that investors are focusing on is the piece that says there's going to be an extra 3.8% tax on investment income. And then they stop and they start panicking and they say, oh, I got to get rid of the investment income or I have to take my gains now. But you have to stop and understand the rules, and the Medicare surtax is going to apply to people if their page one income and their married filing joint is $250,000 or more. So if you're, and don't give me any numbers, but let's pretend you're married and your filing joint and your income on page one of your return is way more than $250,000.
Oh, God, I'd love it.
Yeah. Then you might have a Medicare surtax. And that's why we're seeing a lot of people, you know, talking about taking their gains, and this volatility in the market could be affected by people, you know, panicking with all of these things. So if someone is making less than $250,000 as a married filing joint person in 2013, they're not going to be subject to the Medicare surtax. If they were, then we might have people take their gains in 2012. Are you understanding? We might have them take their gains in 2012 to avoid the 3.8% tax next year. Okay? So that's one of the reasons.
It sounds like that's not a large percentage of the population.
Probably not. So now we go back to your question of, should you sell stocks and have a capital gain in 2012? You know, it all depends on, you know, how nervous people get and if they think tax rates are going up. Again, if President Obama was elected on the platform that he wasn't going to raise taxes on people making $250,000 or less, married filing joint, if you say that that would probably hold true, if, and again, your 2012 is under 250, if your 2013 is going to be under 250, maybe your capital gains rates are going to be the same in 2013. So you really have to crunch the numbers, you know, see what kind of gains we're talking about to see if it makes sense for you. So I can't answer that question for any one individual without looking at, you know, their information to know what's going to make sense. Or not.
I know you couldn't, but mm-hmm. You give me some guidance now. Thank you.
Okay, great. But I do like the 0% capital gains tax rate for people who are in the 15% or lower bracket, if it makes sense from an investment decision as well. So put it all together. But, John, I thank you for calling this evening.
Thank you very much.
Okay, have a good night. Thanks. These kinds of questions come up. And we have, when we're talking about capital gains on rental real estate, Matt, which we're going to talk a little bit about now, the call, I'm going to kind of advance that a little bit faster. I want to caution people when we're talking about rental properties, mm-hmm. because if someone invest in a rental property, let's say they invest $200,000 and they're renting it and it's a regular rental, they could take depreciation on that. And what happens is the value of that property that they're depreciating, let's say net of the land, because you have to allocate some of the purchase price to land, let's say the building is $200,000. You depreciate that over years and you're getting a deduction on your tax return. What happens when you go to sell? You know, you're thinking in your head, oh, I bought it for $200,000. I'm selling it for $220,000. I'm going to have a $20,000 gain. And what they don't realize is that $200,000 with the depreciation each year reduces their cost. So if you take $20,000 of depreciation on a $200,000 building, your cost, in essence, I'll call it adjusted basis, is $180,000. So if you sell it for $220,000, you don't have a $20,000 gain, you have a $40,000 gain. But guess what, folks? It's not all capital gain. Some of it's ordinary income, because to the extent you took depreciation, that comes back in not at those nice capital gains tax rates we were talking about. Some of that comes back in at ordinary income tax rates. Okay? So the phone number to call this evening, thank you, John, for calling. If we have other people who want to call in, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Matt, so whether or not someone wants to, it's off air, we'll take that after the break. If someone's looking to go pure rental, or, you know, rent, let's say, use the property personally, what kind of questions do people have to ask themselves if they're looking for rental property?
I think the biggest question you've got to ask if you're going to have a rental property is, who's going to be renting it?
There you go.
You know, I think a lot of clients that are looking to buy investment properties, we caution them on liability, right? Student rentals, beach rentals, things like that. You're probably not doing a huge amount of pre-qualification for who's renting it. They probably are younger and have good credit and have money, but we don't know how they're actually going to treat your rental property. So you want to be careful of who's renting it. You may buy an attached house or rent a portion of your house to a tenant, and you could be an owner-occupier. I think that's a great way to do rental because, you're on-premise to, handle any issues that come up, and you're still an occupier of the residence, but you're supplementing, your mortgage payment with a little cash flow from either renting out some of your house or a portion of your house or a room in your house. That's a great way to do rentals. So you've really got to look at who's going to be in there. Are you going to be an owner-occupier or aren't you? Banks would look at that when they give financing. And then really ultimately, what's your goal with the property? Lori, if you were to buy an investment property and things break at night or things are, cutting the grass, do you want to be the one doing all the maintenance? Do you have time, experience to do all the maintenance? We have a lot of clients who are very handy and they're retired and they don't mind handling all that maintenance. And for them, it's worth putting that in to receive some supplemental cash flow. We have other people who don't have the time to do that, and that runs the property down. And as a result, they can't rent the property. They're getting less desirable tenants because they have to lower the rent because the building is falling apart. So you've got to make sure you balance, do I have time to maintain it? Am I going to give a piece of my cash flow to a property management company to maintain it, which I'm obviously paying for that. So you've got to look at all the factors, cost, are you going to be an owner-occupier, and who's going to rent your property? If you can really kind of zero in on those three things, then you really start getting a game plan together on what your cash flow will be, who's going to maintain the property, and ultimately what your rate of return will be on the investment.
So it's really good to do your due diligence beforehand, folks.
Absolutely.
If you're considering the rental property from earlier, what you said, Matt, whether it fits really into asset allocation in their portfolio and their cash flow, and then also considering who's going to be doing the work. And I imagine people who are handier, they would benefit more from their cash flow if they're willing to put in the sweat equity. But that's not always the case. So if you're not going to do the maintenance, wears down the property, it loses its value, and then you've lost your desire to have that cash flow and doing well. So you've got to consider all those things. Folks, we're going to take this call that was off air when we get back from our break. Otherwise, give us a call, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices. And I have in the studio with me this evening financial advisor Matt Petrozelli. We're talking about different opportunities with real estate, just kind of trying to give you some general exposure to all the different types of real estate investments that people could be going into. And it's all about awareness, making sure that whatever you're looking at fits with your portfolio, with your risk tolerance, with your cash flow. And if it just kind of makes some really, if it makes sense for you to get into real estate and trying to make sure that you do your due diligence, et cetera. The phone number to call this evening is 610-758-8810. And we had a call from Art in Collegeville, and he had asked the question, is it generally true that over the last several years, there has been a negative correlation between real estate investment trust prices and overall real estate prices? So, Matt, I think what he's asking, a negative correlation, meaning prices go one direction on real estate investment trust, REITs, different than overall real estate prices. I imagine he's talking real estate market in general. So if you want to kind of massage that and interpret it for me.
That's a great question. And I don't have all the data at my fingertips, you know, as we're here in the studio. But I think what he's trying to get at is we mentioned earlier in the show publicly traded REITs. So these are pools of real estate investments that trade on the stock market. And as we all know, in today's economy, in today's market, markets can move very quickly. So if you've got a couple houses or a couple pieces of commercial property around your street, and people are plowing money into these publicly traded REITs, they may go up 10% in 2, 3, 4 months. But the price of the home next to you that's for sale isn't going to show the same value. In fact, as long as it sits on the market, it may even depreciate a little bit. So in general, when you talk about REITs, they have the ability, if they're publicly traded, to accelerate in price very fast. And as a result, they have they can decelerate in price very fast, too. If the bottom drops out and everybody's pulling money out of these publicly traded REITs, it's just like stocks. The value of the properties in the REIT might not be dropping, but the price of the REIT's going to drop. So your investment will drop, whereas real property will stay probably a little bit level. So they can negatively correlate. There's exceptions to every rule, though, Lori. So this is more of a general question, but they can, because publicly traded investments move quicker than real property that's sitting listed on the market.
Okay. Well, Art, I hope you're still listening, and I hope that answered your question. And it was a good explanation as far as I could grasp, Matt, so I appreciate that. Folks, if you have questions, we still have time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Matt, if you'll give me a few minutes here, I just kind of want to go over some tax implications of working with rental property, since we've got about 9 minutes left. And you're free to jump in anytime you want if you want to throw in some extra information here. So what I wanted to talk about is when people are deciding or considering, they've gone through all their due diligence, and let's say they've decided to do rental properties. Matt talked about maybe being an owner-tenant of even a home. I see this with clients who might have a twin, and maybe they live in one side and then they rent the other. Something like a twin would be much easier to keep your record straight when you're trying to get ready for your income tax and how you're reporting your rental activity. So what you have to be aware of when you're renting is that now you have new record keeping requirements that you might not have had for your principal residence. So if you have a rental property and you have a home that you're renting, let's call it residential real estate, you might have a mortgage, you'll have real estate tax. And that's what you're familiar with when we're looking at a principal residence. But a rental property, you might also have things like insurance that you have to pay for, certain utilities that your tenant isn't paying for, repairs that your tenant isn't going to pay for, maybe some capital improvements like a new roof or cupboards. So those are all things that you're going to have to track that maybe when you're thinking about your principal residence, you wouldn't have had to. So one of the things you want to keep in mind is, and I suggest to people, is you print off a Schedule E from the IRS's website, irs.gov, print off a Schedule E, and you'll see all the different categories of expenses that you should be tracking for your rental property. If you have a mixed-use property where you're using it personal and renting it out to other people at fair rental, the requirements are much stricter, and we can get into that a little bit if I have time, but you've got to be very careful when you have mixed-use property as to documenting what is personal and what is not personal. But we have a caller on line one. We have John. John, can you hear us? John? Oh, John, I'm sorry. I think we lost you. John had a question. I think it says evicting in a rental. So I'm guessing, John, that you might have had a tenant that you need to evict. I don't have a lot of experience with that. I think you probably have to go to your magistrate and, you know, file certain paperwork. I know it could be very touchy as far as trying to evict tenants, and there are restrictions around that. So I would suggest Matt might have some comment on that.
Right. I think the best defense is a good offense. I think, you know, if you do have a rental property, you want to make sure that you do as much screening up front as you can, so you don't get into the situation of having to go through that process of evicting a tenant and going to the court and having an eviction notice and then having the sheriff carry that out. That could be a strenuous process for everybody involved. You want to make sure you have the ability to run credit checks, background checks. You want to get professional and personal references for people who are renting, you know, your property that you own. If you do that and you have a really good search process and a good due diligence process up front with your tenants, and you're very clear and have a solidly constructed lease, you should not run into that situation very often. And if you do, your lease is very clear cut and should cut down on the amount of red tape should you need to evict somebody.
Okay, good. So, John, even though you got cut off, I hope that that helped answer your question. And, you know, I just had someone I was talking to last night who's had a tenant for, I think, 5 years. So, again, if you do that due diligence process, then it's really a win-win for everybody, because I would imagine as a property owner, if you're renting, you would probably be less inclined to raise rates on good long-term tenants who are, you know, taking care of the property and managing it well. So thanks for that. When before that phone call, I was talking about mixed-use property. We see this quite often where it gets even a little bit more, the waters get a little bit more muddied, is where we have people who have a house at the beach and they're going to say it's a rental property. And maybe there might be some element of, you know, personal use there. What you have to really be careful here with is if you're going to buy a rental property that you is really has the nature of a vacation home, it's at the shore, it's at the, you know, the mountain where they're skiing, that kind of thing, you have to be careful to avoid, you know, vacation home rules. And what that says is if you're not really renting your property at fair rental, maybe you're having your friends come in and maybe you're renting to them, but it's not really a fair market rental, then, or you're there more than, you know, 14 days out of the year. The vacation home rule says that rental expenses allocable to the rental activity cannot exceed the gross rental income. So quite often you'll hear people say, I have a rental property and I have a loss on it. Well, one of the reasons people have losses on rental property, it's not because they're like really losing money on it. Sometimes the depreciation throws people into a loss situation. So maybe you're renting for $14,000 a year. You have real estate taxes, mortgage, and depreciation, or real estate taxes, expenses, et cetera, that might be $10,000. You'd think you'd net $4,000, but you also had your principal payments in there and you also had some depreciation. The depreciation, let's say it's $5,000. You end up with a $1,000 loss. If you are in a vacation home rule situation, you may not be able to take those losses on page one of your return. Let me mention one other thing because I only have a couple minutes left. Some people do rental properties and they think they're going to get losses on their return again because of the depreciation, because of the mortgage interest. They know it's going to be a good deal, but up front in the initial years, it'll look like you have a loss on your return. You have to be careful before you start counting those losses and thinking you're going to get those and lower your taxes. Sometimes you don't get to take the losses. There's all kinds of rules around rental properties. It's considered a passive activity. There's passive loss rules. And those passive loss rules say that if your income on page one of your tax return is too high, if it's over $100,000, there's some limitations. If it's over $150,000, your passive losses are going to be suspended. You can't use them currently. So you have to be aware of all these nuances. You might hear your friends, your neighbor, someone on television talking about rental losses and how they can offset your other ordinary income. You have to make sure if those rules actually apply to you. So you need to be aware when you're going into any of these kinds of activities what you're dealing with. There are different rules And they are so complicated for every different type of rental property that you might have that you really need to understand all the impacts of those. So, Matt, we've got about a minute left. I thank you for being here. Can you sum up kind of what we've talked about tonight? Give us some last final words.
In 1 minute, sure, I'll do my best. I think real estate's a complex but yet important asset class that investors want to think about. So whether you're investing in REITs in the open market in your portfolio, whether you're investing in your first principal residence, or whether you're buying a rental property or managing a rental property, you want to make sure that you do your due diligence, understand what your opportunity costs are amongst all these different types of real estate investments, and always make sure you consult with your tax advisor and your financial advisor to make sure that you're doing what's in your best interest. And like we learned in 2007, being over leveraged and over invested in one type of asset class can always come back to hurt you. So just make sure that you're diversified and taking a look at the big picture too.
And I think that we kind of gave a variety of different ways for people to get into real estate.
Absolutely.
If they wanted
yep.
to. So I think that was good. Matt, if people would like to reach you, what is your contact information?
They can reach me at Valley National at 610-868-9000. And you can always learn about myself and all of our advisors on our website, www.valleynationalgroup.com.
Okay. Thank you for being here. Jeff, I want to thank you for your input tonight, this evening as well. I want to say happy holidays to everybody. I am not going to be here next week. I've decided we're just going to run a recorded show or something. So we will be back right after 2013, January 2nd, and I'm going to talk about what tax law might exist at that point, and mm-hmm. hopefully we'll have some answers for you. So thank you, Andrea. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Matt. Coming up, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD, and on translators 93.9 Eastern Phillipsburg, 93.7 Fogelsville, Truxtertown, and on the web at WDIY.org.
House Speaker John Boehner is rejecting the latest proposal from the White House to avoid year-end tax hikes and spending cuts. Boehner instead out with a plan that would extend tax cuts for everyone making less than $1 million a year. It's expected a vote will come up in the House tomorrow, but it's unlikely to pass in the Senate. President Obama at a White House news conference said he's prepared to do tough things to reach a deal to avert the so-called fiscal cliff, and said there's no reason for talks to fail, but he said it will require some give and take.
The principle that rates are going to need to go up, he's conceded. I've said I'm willing to make some cuts. What separates us is probably a few hundred billion dollars. The idea that we would put our economy at risk because you can't bridge that gap